Views on this program are opinions of dental industry experts and not necessarily those of dentist advisors. Opinions shared in the following interview do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
This is Dentist Money. Now, here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show, where we help dentists make smart financial decisions. I'm your host, Reese Harper, on site at Yankee Dental Congress with Kathy Ells at TD Bank. I'm really excited for this interview, Kathy, so thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You've been in the business for almost 25 years, right?
I have.
And that is more time than most people have been in dentistry. So we have a real treat today in the perspective, I think, that you can offer to young dentists, dentists in the middle age of their career and kind of their latter stages. I think you'll have a lot of great insight. Well, tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into dentistry and the career path that you've had, because you've been in a lot of different places and seen a lot of different things.
I have. I actually started in the dental field back in 1990. I worked for a very large CPA firm. I helped manage about 200 dental practices. Did that for about 7 years and then decided to go into banking. And at the time, it was really leasing, right? So it was Matsco at the time, and then that evolved into Wells Fargo. Did that for about 18 years, left there, and then finally landed myself over at TD Bank. Great bank, love it. So really excited as a healthcare specialist.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people don't know what TD means. And I learned it a while ago. It's Toronto Dominion, right?
Right, yeah. Yes.
And it's a Canadian bank
it
originally.
Is.
But it's like grown into the U.S.
Right. We're primarily in the East Coast.
Yeah, a lot of people have a strong East Coast presence. Mm-hmm. And they've got a great brand and a strong, you know, balance sheet. And I think that it's interesting. I don't know that a lot of people in the West probably don't know that TD Bank does healthcare loans even, or that do a lot of healthcare lending. So
right, it's fairly new for our bank here in the States.
Yeah.
Right. So here
not
in the
new
States,
for you though.
No, not new for me. So here in the States, we've been doing it probably about 5 years.
That's awesome. So tell me, I saw you did a presentation called "The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Practice Ownership," and I thought that was a really cool title. Tell me a little bit about what that's all about.
Well, I do have to give credit to a CPA that I was working with, Andrew Schwartz, on that one.
Oh, Andrew, yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And he came to me and he said, let's do this presentation. And we kind of developed this good, the bad, and the ugly. And just kind of, you know, my experience of what's happened and what I've seen. So I said to Andrew, I said, I don't really want to start off the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'd rather start off the ugly, the bad, and the good.
Yeah, and on a high note. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, well, you know, fortunately, after, you know, 25 years in the business and, you know, probably, you know, working with more than 1,500 doctors, there's only really a handful of things that are ugly.
Yeah.
Right? And then there are some things that are ugly that you can fix, and there are some things that are ugly that you can't fix.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, when you're looking at the ugly, right?
Yeah.
No matter what, where you are, in what phase of your career, you have things like the D's. I call it the D's.
Okay.
Right? So you have death, disability, divorce, drugs, you know, withdrawal of a partner.
Yeah.
Those are types of things that, you know, we can mitigate some things. If it's death, we have life insurance.
Yeah.
If it's disability, we have disability insurance. If it's, you know, divorce and drugs, look, I can't help you there.
Yeah.
You know, withdrawal of partnerships, we have partnership agreements. So, you know, there are some things that, you know, we can do to mitigate the real ugly.
Yeah.
But if you find yourself in one of those predicaments, you know, it's best to definitely sought out some professional help and, you know, tap into those people that can really help you.
Yeah.
So
what about the we've got the what are the bad things that kind of come to mind? Those are both the good, those are the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, no. So the bad things kind of are specific to if you're starting a practice, purchasing a practice, or expanding your practice.
Okay.
Or even getting your practice ready for sale, right? So there's good things that come along with all those categories, and there's bad things that come along with all those categories.
Okay.
You know, what's probably, you know, the most important is being prepared. Right? So no matter what you're doing, preparing yourself properly is what's going to get you to success.
Okay.
Right? Because if you don't prepare, let me tell you, you know, there are cracks that you could fall into that you're not going to get yourself out of, and you're going to end up into that ugly.
Okay.
That ugly space.
Yeah.
You know, so, but there are things, and no matter how many times I really tell people, the simple things, credit reports, okay. Right? Pull your credit report, see what's on there, see who else is on there, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
See who else is on uh-huh. there. Pull your credit report, see what it looks like,
yeah.
Right? Before you go to the lender. You yeah. go to the lender, you know, and the lender finds it
it's
first.
Too late, right?
The yeah. lender's going to be asking a lot of questions because at that point in time, it's already deep inside the credit department where we have regulations that we have to make decisions in certain amounts of time.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't give us a time to clean things up. But, you know, be responsible, right? And pull your credit and make sure that you're, if you're planning on doing something big, that you know what you're.
Totally.
You know what your house looks like.
Tell me, what are some of the good things then that we have to look forward to?
Well, you know, I've done hundreds of startups, hundreds of acquisitions and expansions and, you know, work with the sellers as well. But, you know, the good things is that, you know, if you're starting a practice and, you know, well, first of all, here in the Northeast, right, everybody wants to purchase a practice first. We don't have a lot of inventory for purchasing a practice. So people will go out and they'll look. I mean, they may look for a couple of years before they find, you know, before they find the right practice for them. But if you buy a practice, it's turnkey, right? You go in there, you get the keys, you open the door, it's yours, there's cash flow coming in. You know, where I find that it could turn bad is if you fire the staff. You don't have a proper transition. There's not a good introduction to the buyer and the seller and the staff. Or, you know, you try to do too much too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So you decide you buy a practice, and then you decide that you're going to go in there and totally renovate it, you know, and not have the cash flow to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So that's kind of the, you know, the good and the bad of the practice acquisitions.
Yeah.
As far as the startups go, look, you can go in there and design a beautiful space. You know, it's a one-time shot, so you'll be putting the investment into the practice right from the get-go, building out that practice. It's beautiful, you know, and you're set for your career.
Yeah.
If you buy a practice, I always say, well, that's great. I love when people buy practices because they get to see me twice.
Yeah.
Once when you, right? Once when you need the initial finance, and then probably 5 or 6 years later when you were renovating your facility.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I love practice acquisitions. But startups are beautiful. Beautiful, yeah. And if planned properly.
You get to design it from the ground up exactly the way you want to flow properly. And so if somebody says, hey, Kathy, I'm in the New England area and I'm wondering if I should buy a practice, start up a practice, what's your preference? You know, what do you think I should be thinking about? Should I start it from the ground up or should I buy an existing one?
So really, I kind of laugh at this because when I teach at the schools, you uh-huh. know, the students ask me that all the time. Right.
What's best, right?
Right. What's best? What do I do? And it kind of reverts back to, you know, what's your financial house look like? Do you have money that you're able to rely on?
So
right.
Do you have any liquidity
or savings,
yeah, emergency fund?
Right. Emergency fund, whatever. You know, how's your student debt? Right. Those types of questions. But
so if
now,
they have a really high amount of student debt and they don't have any liquidity, starting a practice is going to be kind of scary.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's going to be kind of tough.
Yeah.
But let's just assume now, for the sake of our discussion, that they do have a savings account, they do have a good plan, you know, so what would really make that startup a success,
yeah.
Right? And I call it the crystal ball, right? It's my crystal ball.
Okay.
It all revolves around demographics. Right, the law of supply and demand. Is there enough people to you know, have for your patient base?
Yeah.
So if you find that there's a lot of dentists that you're in competition with, okay, it's going to be really difficult for you to move those patients from an existing patient base. Now I have, you know, another practice. I just actually ran into the doctor last night, and you know, his office, when we did the demographics in his office, there was like 5,400 patients and there was only one dentist,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a perfect scenario.
Yeah.
right? So you only really need 1,500 patients in your practice to have a successful practice if you're circulating them correctly, you know. So we knew that that would be just a slam dunk. And you know what? You know, a year and a half later, I mean, they're doing a million plus a year already.
Yeah, that's great.
So
people shouldn't be scared to start from scratch as long as the demographics are there and as long as they have enough capacity to...
Right.
To compete and succeed, right?
Right. And it's really all about building your team, right? Because it's not just that one piece, but, you know, do you have a good signed lease? You know, are you working with an equipment specialist that's going to help move you through your process and where you are? Are you working with, you know, the supply representatives that are going to, you know, I mean, these people call on these doctors monthly or quarterly. I mean, they go in there and they see these doctors. So if any issues come up, they should really be talking to... who's ever on your team. You know, the CPA, you know, having a dental CPA involved, having a dental attorney involved. I mean, you know, and a dental, especially, I think the most important person is the dental lender, yeah. Which would be me.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. The most important person.
That's the most important person.
The quarterback of the team.
No, right. So, but of course, if you ask the CPA that question, they'd say that they're the most important person, right? Yeah. So, you know, but anyway, you know, so, you know, it's really, you know, just building that team of advisors, working with that team, and whether it's an acquisition or a startup or an expansion, right? No matter what you're doing, you know, make sure you engage that team because those people are there to help you and make sure that you're not making any mistakes.
No
you
question.
Make that mistake once, you're done.
Yeah.
Right?
It helps you avoid a lot of mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen people get a lot of benefit from surrounding themselves with a good team?
Oh, yeah. I've seen some pretty bad things where you have a divorce attorney trying to negotiate a partnership agreement. Actually, I don't know why that didn't work.
Okay. So. Yep. 10-4.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me about like some just is there any general advice before we leave the startup world that you'd like to leave with people? Because I think you had a lot of experience at Rosen, you know, initially working with a lot of practices. What are some kind of parting thoughts for these startup dentists or as you're kind of going into thinking about practice ownership?
Well, I would say really just investigate all avenues, and whether it's a startup or a partnership buy-in or purchasing a practice, you know, just investigate all of your options and then one by one kind of eliminate them as they come along, you know, and just tap into those advisors. And
do you feel like it's easy for people to get demographic information in New England about the, you know, patient to doctor ratio in their area?
Yeah, so there are some firms that specialize in doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're wonderful. I mean, you have, there's really three different people that, you know, we kind of utilize. There's a gentleman that does a report. It's two pages. It's just statistical numbers, but it gives you the information that you want, right?
Yeah.
Two pages, quick and easy to read. It's kind of a graph. That's it. It's done.
Okay. Who's that gentleman?
That's Eric Solomon.
Okay.
Yeah. The second one is Practice 360, which gives you pertinent information, very visual. They plot. They show you where everything is, you know, where all the patients are in relation to the competition. And they do a nice report, and they do a very nice narrative as far as what they think, you know, your
likelihood
site selection
of success should, might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the third one is an outfit that's located out in California, Scott McDonald. And he does a very in-depth report. It's a very nice report. I mean, he goes through and he tells you everything that, you know, about the area and, you know, what the likelihood is as far as, you know, getting traffic, you know, by the areas. So he has a really nice report too.
Yeah, I've seen Scott's information too. He does a good job.
Yeah, he does a good job.
So that's kind of some resources people can use to find out if a startup kind of makes sense. I think a lot of people don't take the time to do demographics research. They just kind of go with gut feel sometimes.
Well, you know, our young doctors, right, they're very internet savvy, right? So, you know, you can go onto Google, right?
And look around.
Right. And you type in dentist in Boston, right? And it will populate and show you all the pinpoints on a map. But it's really understanding you know, the population and the ratio and what's drawing in that area.
Yeah, it's a small price to pay when you're about to invest millions of dollars, yeah. Right?
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
I think sometimes people try to cut costs in the wrong areas.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. Do you ever find that sometimes doctors, aren't willing to maybe invest in the right areas?
Yeah. I'll have a doctor that comes to me and says that they're going to, you know, try to do a startup for $300,000. Right. So here in the Northeast, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. It won't.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe in other parts, but, you know, here in the Northeast, you know, probably not.
Yeah.
Our construction alone, you know, is pretty expensive. So, you
probably wouldn't even be able to finish your build out or get close to it for that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Probably averaging around $150 a square foot.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2,000 square feet times $150 a square foot, it's $300,000.
Just to build out alone.
Just to build out, right?
Yep.
Without any equipment.
No equipment, yeah.
You know, or any of the other stuff.
So you think a startup in this area, it's probably reasonable that it'd be, between depending on what kind of equipment you buy and how well you equip everything, you could be up to $550,000 to $600,000.
Easy.
Easy, right?
Yeah.
What's the most expensive startup you've seen? Do you think it's been about that high?
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple of them that were like $850,000, $900,000.
Yeah.
Gets pricey. So it does. And, you know, of course, they're in one of the high-rise buildings. You have to use union contractors. You know, you have to shut the roads down. You have to have, you know, your...
So hard. The barrier to entry is really high.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about where people are at in this acquisition process, because I think that's another place where you can add a lot of value. I'm identifying a practice to buy. I'm thinking about purchasing it. Maybe I've got a few different options. What advice do you have for people there as it relates to financing or as it relates to, you know, the practice decision generally?
I'm going to answer that in a few steps.
Okay, cool.
Okay, because initially, you know, you want to make sure that you're choosing a place that, one, no covenant, restrictive covenant exists.
Okay.
Right? So if you have a covenant not to compete, you need to abide by whatever document it is that you signed. Okay, so that's number one.
Have you seen bad situations arise from that before?
I've seen terrible situations arise by that.
Okay.
And it certainly exists.
Yeah.
So for anybody that's out there that think, oh yeah, my covenant not to compete isn't going to hold up, I probably would say you need to go talk to your attorney.
Can you share an example of that without disclosing any names or anything of something you've seen that and what the situation was?
Yeah, I've seen that a doctor purchased a practice. And he was like really close to being like a tenth of a mile, you know, inside of the covenant not to compete. He thought that, you know, it's the tenth of a mile. What's that, right? Out of a 5 mile
radius,
right? So you and I might say, oh, yeah, it's close enough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it was a tenth of a mile the other way, it would be fine, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the agreement he signed was within 5 miles, and that was it.
Interesting.
They immediately put a cease and desist in order, and like within a week, like it was done.
Interesting.
Right? Oh yeah, immediately. And another one, you know, working for one of the bigger corporation kind of dental.
Big DSO.
Right.
Okay.
They want to protect their assets.
Yeah.
As well, you know. So, you know, really just making sure that you understand, you know, where you can go is very important.
Okay.
The second thing is, that's probably even more important than the first one, really, is making sure that, you know, you live and work in the areas that you want to live and work.
Okay.
Right? So if you're a city person, you have a house or a condo inside the city, and, you know, you're buying a practice out in Western Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Okay. That's probably not going to work either. Right? So making sure that you live and work in the right areas.
What's the downside of maybe working far away? I might be asking an obvious question, but I think it's important to clarify that. You know, why do I want to kind of be close to where I work?
Well, you know, if you're here in the Boston area, I mean, you're really talking about traffic.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, how long is it going to take you to get to work every day?
Yep. So
right?
the time so, of commuting and the time of travel, you need to take that into account because it costs money.
Right.
Right.
And in the beginning, you could be young and, that's okay. I can handle that. But as time goes on, it may get more and more difficult. You have a family, you know, or just, you know, now that you're, busier. You have an established practice, you know what I mean, and you're busier, you have late nights. I mean, it's just longer commutes, right? Yeah. So, you know.
Do you think it also helps people network better and kind of build a patient base better?
Absolutely, right? So, well, you know, I mean, I have some doctors that say, you know, I like to live outside because when I leave work, I want to leave work, right? Uh-huh. So I don't want to see patients. I want to just go and do my own thing. But then you have the other doctors that, you know, 100% involved, right? They're in the Little League.
Yeah,
they're in the supermarkets. They're in all the organizations, right? Your religious organization, yeah. Port Church Bulletins, your, you know, placemats at the local diner. I mean, right? So yeah. Very, very involved,
yeah.
You know? So, you know,
What do you think tends to work better?
It depends on the type of practice.
Okay.
Right? Totally depends on the type of practice you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like to see doctors get involved in the community? Does that seem to help them?
If you have a family practice, absolutely.
Yeah.
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 If you have more of a, you know, a different kind of a practice, then, you know, then maybe not. So those are, you know, two of the early phases of, you know, practice ownership, right?
Yep.
Or when you're purchasing a practice, you know, the next thing that you need to be careful of when you go into like practice acquisitions is, okay, now you've located a facility, it's close to your home, no covenants not to compete, credit's in order, got a little bit of cash in the bank, you know, student debt's maybe $250,000, you're very comfortable, you're going to go buy this practice, you get 100% financing, everything's good. The next biggest mistake that I see at this point is that they don't do their due diligence, right? So now they're not doing their due diligence on the files. So they become friendly with Dr. Seller. They decide they're going to go out to lunch when maybe you should be doing your due diligence. They go back a second time and they go out to lunch again,
yep.
Right? Great Dr. Seller. And they don't take that time to do the due diligence. Now, when I first started in the dental industry, doing your due diligence was easy. Right. So you walked up to the charts on the wall and you pulled it out and you opened it up and you saw what kind of treatments you had available. Right. So it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays we have practice management systems. Right. So we don't have charts on the wall anymore. Right. So we have practice management systems. So knowing the types of reports that you should be running. Right. Production by procedure, production by provider. You know, looking at the treatment planning, seeing what's available. What type of philosophy is Dr. Seller, you know, operating their practice? Is it a, you know, a quadrant dentistry practice where all the quadrants are already all done on all the patients, right?
Yeah.
Or is it, you know, where you have, you know, maybe a hygiene base at 50%,
yeah.
Right? And the doctor has this huge amount of space to go in and do dentistry.
Grow. Yeah.
So, you know, doing the due diligence, very, very important.
Yeah, I need to know what kind of practice you're buying and what it's going to be like when you get in.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great insight. What kind of advice do you have for people who are like, now maybe they're through that phase of their career, they've had an established practice, they've had a great career, they're thinking about exiting or selling or transitioning out?
Okay, so a couple of things. One, make sure your financial house is in order, right? Make sure you've thought about this, make sure your retirement plan is in place. Make sure personally you're ready to retire, okay? And not just think you're ready to retire because you don't feel like doing it anymore. The second thing is make sure your practice finances are in order as well. Make sure you have, you know, a good accountant that you're working with that's putting your numbers together, because everything is going to rely on the tax returns and the interim financial statements. So if you look at the tax returns and throughout all these years, you know, doctors may have, you know, officer compensation or rent or, you know, automobile expenses, whatever it might be. But if you're running anything else through the practice, you need to make sure that all that stuff is cleaned up. Okay. Because, you know, Dr. Buyer is not and will not pay for that.
Yeah.
And those are the things you work on with your accountant and with the attorney to make sure. So if you're selling your practice, making sure your stuff is in order, because the professionals that you'll be working with will certainly point out those spots.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's go back. I want to just ask you to think back over your career and ask you to think about big mistakes that you've seen people make. that you wish you could have helped them with?
Well, you know, on startups, probably the biggest mistake is building something that's too big.
Okay.
And not having their financial house put together the right way.
So they get a little ambitious about how big of a space they want,
right.
How many operatories they
right.
want, they take on too much debt.
Right,
and
exactly.
then what's the consequence of that?
Well, you know, they could be working really long and hard hours. They could be very frustrated, you know, and it could take them a lot longer to really move in that practice. And then the real big downside is that they could file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Right.
Have you seen people have to have that happen occasionally?
No, not really.
That's
I mean,
good.
I have to say in probably the 1,500 loans that I've done in my history, you know, I probably have about five.
Yeah.
That, you know, that didn't work out. So you think, you know, that's a pretty darn good ratio, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, 1,495.
Less than 1/10 of 1%.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
I mean, it's a fantastic, you know, profession. So.
In the cases where there has been default, do you remember what reasons there were for those? And why the unusual cases where maybe somebody did default on a loan and why that might be?
A lot of it has to do with those Ds that are uncontrollable,
okay.
right? So
yeah.
I'm going to have to say that it would probably be the death and the drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
right?
can understand
so
that.
So not having your life insurance. And then, I mean, but, you know, the chances of something happening is...
So slim.
Right,
yeah.
So slim.
Let's
so.
Talk about any... What's another mistake that you've seen besides building too much space, right? Or having too much space? Is there anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, not building enough.
Okay, too small, right?
Right, right exactly.
I can make it work in this little space.
Yeah, exactly.
I got 500 square feet.
Yeah,
I've got two operatories.
Yeah, exactly. Well, right, so if you have two operatories, way too small,
yeah.
right? So
mm-hmm.
you're not going to make any money.
Yeah.
You know, so you really have to plan... You know, the space, right?
Like, what's a
you
good
know,
size,
the,
do you think, for a good general practice?
You know, I mean, that depends on, that totally depends on what the doctor right.
Yeah.
So they may say, well, I want to have an associate in here. I want to bring in specialists
Let's
in
say
here.
It's a single doctor. He's not going to have an associate. And what do you think's a good size for that doctor?
At least five.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if he wants to have a full-time associate, I'm going to be me and an associate producing full-time. We want to be doing 200, 2 million plus. What
oh,
size do I want to do?
You're probably looking at, you know, probably 8 to 10 ops.
Yeah.
Right?
Great.
To have enough hygiene and, you know, two ops per doctor.
Yep.
Right? So.
How many square feet, if I'm a single doctor with no associate in Massachusetts and I want to have that five ops practice, how small can I have the practice and still make it fit?
So, you know, average... 400 square feet per operatory,
uh-huh.
but there are different ways now that they can get smaller cabinetry, you know, eliminating some space.
A little more streamlined.
Right, so you can get, you know, more operatories into a smaller space now, but then you have to live in that space too. So if you're a big person, you know, maybe that's not going to be,
possible.
You know, very comfortable for you.
Yeah, so you know? If you
so,
have, if I was at 1,500 square feet, in five operatories, you think that would be a little tight?
Yeah.
Yeah, but at 2,000, it's probably, I can make that work.
Right, and I'm not saying that 1,500 won't work, right? So I'm just saying it's gonna be tight.
I probably don't have an office, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably
no
just,
private space for me.
Right.
I
no.
have to hang out in the lobby.
That's right.
When I want to sit down.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
So
no
is,
waiting room, no,
there,
no staff lounge.
So we talked about too big, we talked about too small. What's another thing that comes to mind of a mistake that people make that you would want to help them avoid?
Just as timing.
Timing.
Right.
Okay.
So timing and knowing where you are in your career. You know. So I do a lot of really big expansions that are a million plus, and knowing the numbers. Knowing where you're going to go to, how to build that up when you're doing an expansion. Do you want to buy that building? You want to rent that building? You have a good lease moving into that building. And a lot of times when I'm working with the doctors, practice management companies are very important, right? So we're trying to grow the practice, trying to understand the needs of the patients, you know, making sure that we have a plan in place to grow the practice. And a lot of times we hit our first benchmark before they even leave the current space, because the practice management companies are excellent at understanding the systems, finding the flaws, you know, and making sure that, they're finding the right,
yeah,
you know, program to help that doctor move along in their patients.
So when you say practice management companies, a lot of people feel like they've had consultants or practice managers that may not have done a good job. And then some people feel like they've had people that have done a great job and it's really helped them. In the New England area, which is you're kind of most familiar with, you've seen it be successful and helpful for a lot of people to have a practice management consultant, especially when it comes to a startup.
Yeah, I think startups are definitely, like you have to have it on a startup.
Yeah.
But I think there's different kinds of practice management companies too.
Yeah.
Right? So you can have a national practice management company. You can have a medium-based practice management company, you know, or you can have your one-on-one practice management consultants that are out there.
Hyper-local.
Right, exactly. So, and that goes back to the doctor, too. Who do you like to work with? Do you like big? Do you like medium? Do you like small? Right? Do you like one-on-one? So, just thinking and understanding that, you know what, you have choices. You have the Yankee Dental, you know, conference that we're at right now. It's a great opportunity to go out and meet people and see what else is out there.
Yeah.
You know, go visit the exhibitors and see, you know, who these people are and see. I mean, you're going to have some kind of a connection with that person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's really important, especially when choosing your consultant, your accountant, your lender.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a relationship. How long has that person been in practice for? How long has that person been doing it for? You know, are you going to come back here next year and see them again? You know, like me, I've been here for 25 plus years.
Yeah.
Right.
Is there a handful of people that you feel comfortable with that you could kind of share with listeners as options that they can kind of look at that you've at least seen do a pretty good job?
You know, I've worked with just about everybody.
Cool.
Right. So I've worked with just about everybody. And it's really just making sure that the doctor's personality is mixing with, you know, whoever they're building on their professional team.
So you'd say narrow it down by making sure that they like the person they're working with, as well as matching up a skill set with the need.
Right.
Or the size of the company with the need.
Right.
So exactly. When I hear big national group, why would I use a big national group? Or in what situation might that be the best choice for me that you've seen?
Well, you know, they have great programs, right? So you'll go to these national programs, and they've got books, and they have material, and they have people that are there like all the time, and they have a program where every certain day of the month they're going to be there, and you're going to be on the phone, you know, no matter what, you're going to be.
Oh yeah,
but they have wonderful books and great, you know, educational material that they can share with the doctors and make the doctors actually responsible for what they're signing up for. You know, and then you have kind of the one, you know, the smaller practice management firms that, you know, maybe they'll go in there for a specific purpose. They want to analyze a certain department or front desk or hygiene or doctor's time or whatever, and then they're done, right? So they just go in there and they do their one little specific thing that they're doing. And then you have like the kind of the solo guy, right, or gal, that goes in there and is physically there on site once a month, once a quarter,
provides a lot of accountability.
Yeah.
So overall, I think the right takeaway there is just find the person that is the right fit for your style, how you like to work. And, you know, if you need more structure, need more accountability, just to, you know, sometimes different people are going to provide different strengths. And so,
I
don't know. It's just good to hear. I think too often dentists shy away from getting help when they're struggling, right? Or when they're starting up.
Right.
Because they're trying to save money when they're starting up and every dollar matters. But you're already investing so much. Sometimes it's a way to protect your investment and make sure that you're making the right decisions.
Right. You know? And, you know, marketing, making sure your marketing is in place and making sure that return on investment's there. Making sure that, you know, the marketing people are getting those patients in the practice and that once they get into the practice, they're greeted properly with the, you know, front desk or by yourself or whoever it might be.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that your hygiene, your assistants, I mean, that every, you know, it all kind of has to work together.
Yeah.
Right. To be successful. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, you've got a great demeanor about, you know, the tone that you carry yourself and the way you want to do what's right for doctors. It's unusual to see that all the time. And And so it seems like you have a lot of, I mean, to stay in the same industry, in the same line of work for 25 years means you care and that people people know that. So congrats for doing that. And
thank you.
I guess I'd like to wrap up with just any parting thoughts that you have for Dennis as we wrap up.
Yeah, just think through your project. Think through what it is. Tap into those consultants and advisors and plan. Prepare.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, you know, the best thing.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Kathy. It's been nice to meet you and hear about you and TD Bank and their product line. And we'll look forward to having another session with you as things evolve. I'm sure things will change over the next year, and we'll maybe catch up with you at next year's conference.
Sounds great. Okay. Thank you so much
Thanks,
for
Kathy.
Inviting me.
Appreciate it.